You think you can destroy Bram Stoker's Dracula with your spoilers? I, who spoiled the plots to several films that came out a number of years before you were born? This is Diabolical, the show where four long-suffering friends dissect film's most dastardly schemes, then compete to improve them. I'm your host, Craig, and this week's movie is 1992's gothic romantic horror, Bram Stoker's Dracula. So, Peril Pals, pour yourself a nice big glass of anything other than wine, ruin your best mate's perfectly good orgy with Monica Bellucci by showing up with a baby, and let's get diabolical. Welcome to this week's episode. As host for this week, I'm the head vampire of the panel of peril. In a moment, I'll welcome the rest of the panel, who will compete against me at the close of the show in a bid to become Winona Ryder's husband, as we each try to come up with the best alternative plan for the movie villain of the week before we vote to name this week's most diabolical. As ever, I'm joined by three incredibly accommodating estate agents. Please introduce yourselves and tell me, what is your favourite British accent by an American actor? And let's start with Adam.
Good evening. I'm Carl Goddard.
Hello. I've got two lined up because my pick is Canadian. Am I allowed to have a Canadian?
I don't see why not. It's basically the same thing as an American.
And they admit as much.
Yeah, basically the same thing. Nobody knows any different. So my favourite British accent from a North American is a cameo in Inglourious Basterds from Mike Myers, who plays the general in that.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite cameos, and I just love his accent in that because it's so over the top and sort of like, that a boy, Lieutenant. Make it yourself like a good chap.
That's the line I was going to say.
And at the end, he's like, got the gist. I absolutely love it. I think that's Mike Myers, like on top form.
That's a great pick. Well, let's hear next from the best.
Hello, the best here. And my favourite English accent by an American actor is quite a recent one. I'm plumping for Mark Ruffalo in the Oscar-winning Poor Things.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have any quotes to mind. Look it up on YouTube. It's pretty funny.
It is very funny, yeah. Ben.
Hello, Ben here. And my favourite British accent by an American actor has to be Michael McKean in Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful. What's it called? Lick My Love Pump.
That's Nigel Tufnell, isn't it? That's Christopher Guest, isn't it?
Is that Christopher Guest, that one, yeah. But they're just all great.
That was my backup in case Canadian wasn't allowed.
Well, I also had Mike Myers on my list, but mine was for the film we covered previously, which is So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Mm.
His Scottish accent, which is British.
Yes, quite right. It's part of the British Isles.
Yes.
The United Kingdom.
Yeah, and I think just because it was on my mind and I watched it recently, I've also picked something from Poor Things, but rather than Mark Ruffalo, I've gone with Emma Stone. She does a very convincing job.
It's good.
It's not a funny one. Mm. She's good.
Yeah, it is. It's really good.
Might reserve the right to come back and add a funny one in. I don't know. Let's see.
I thought you might have picked James Masters from Buffy.
Yeah.
This one's called The Once and Follow My Mum.
That's always the one I think of when I think about him not doing so well. Usually he was okay.
Alternating between Cockney and Northern.
Yeah.
On a case-by-case basis.
Just as Prince Vlad had to die to be reborn as Dracula, so must the Diabolical Podcast metamorphose, and that is why this week I'm killing my traditional trivia quiz and replacing it with a new segment I'm calling Kevin Grisham's Dracula. Now, Francis Ford Coppola's ironically so-called Bram Stoker's Dracula veers off from its namesake source material in several ways, But it isn't the only big screen adaptation to have taken liberties. I'm going to tell you three ways film versions of Dracula have differed from the novel's antagonist, and I want you to identify which of these I made up as a laugh at. So number one, in Dracula 2000, Jerry Butler's Dracula is revealed to be none other than Judas Iscariot, ooh, explaining his aversion to the cross and to the precious metal silver of 30 pieces fame. In Dracula 3000, Langley Kirkwood's Count Orlok is reimagined as an undead cyborg who spreads his technovirus among the doomed crew of the spaceship Demeter, who discover that God and Satan were competing artificial intelligences that arrived on Earth from space in the year 4000 BC. Or is it three? In Van Helsing, Hugh Jackman's amnesiac vampire hunter is revealed to be none other than the angel Gabriel, whose ancient enemy, Richard Roxburgh's Dracula, seeks to use Frankenstein's life-giving technology to reanimate his thousands of stillborn children, and who can only be killed by a werewolf. Which of those Draculas have I made up?
I haven't seen Van Helsing since it came out, but that sounds correct. Like, that's what happens in it from my very hazy memory.
Yeah.
I really want that Dracula 3000 to be a real film, and I want to watch it right now.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Oh, it's a real film. I promise you that.
No, I like the idea of a technovirus. Just everyone dancing.
I don't think it means that. I'll have to watch it and confirm.
I'm surprised at how many Dracula films are, or films including Dracula there is.
Yeah.
It's at least six, isn't it?
At least.
Dracula 1, Dracula 2, Dracula 3.
Blackula.
Dracula Dead Loving It.
Dracula 4 and back after the third one.
Dracula Becomes Her.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say number two's the fakey. That's my guess.
All right, Gaz is going with number two. Any voices of dissent?
I think you've done a little twister on one of them. So I think you've done a twister on Van Helsing.
All right. That'd be funny for Gaz, the only one of us who's seen Van Helsing.
Yeah, I've seen Van Helsing.
You have?
I've seen it, yeah. I went to cinema see it and I've watched it on multiple occasions since. It's not bad.
I've seen a clip from it with a werewolf climbing up a wall or something. It looks pretty good.
It was at the height of Summer's powers, wasn't it?
Hugh Jackman, do you mean?
No, the director, isn't it? Richard Summers, isn't it?
Stephen Summers.
Stephen Summers, right, yeah.
What did I say? Richard Summers, yeah, sorry. Got confused. Stephen Summers.
The one and only, the wickedly talented.
I'm going to say two as well.
Okay, so everyone's voted, and the correct answer is two. Dracula 3000 does exist. Coolio is in it, and so is Udo Kier.
Wow. Looking at it right now, it looks great.
Definitely going to watch it.
Casper Van Dien is Van Helsing.
Yes.
Wow.
Time now to delve into this week's film, Bram Stoker's Dracula. The screenplay was brought to the attention of director Francis Ford Coppola by star Winona Ryder, who offered it to him as an olive branch after departing her role in The Godfather Part 3 at the last minute, disrupting its production. Ryder, who had read and loved the book in high school but had never seen a film adaptation of Dracula, had been attracted to the screenplay by the romantic plot, which reframed the relationship between the eponymous Count, his captive, Jonathan Harker, and Harker's fiancée, Mina Murray, as a tragic love triangle, transcending time and even death. Coppola was reputedly attracted to the project due to his childhood love for Dracula, which Ryder described in an interview as one of his favourite stories from camp, but it's evident from the final result that Coppola's great passion for and knowledge of the history of cinema drove the production, from the overt nods to the tale's period setting coinciding with the birth of cinema, and the Count's vocalised interest in the amazing cinematograph, to the dazzling in-camera and practical effects by Roman Coppola that utilised vintage filmmaking techniques to produce stunning vistas, eerie sights, and uncanny motions without the aid of CGI. Meanwhile, star Gary Oldman was excited to work with Coppola, and particularly keen to deliver the immortal pickup line, I have crossed oceans of time to find you. With a suitably discomforting score by Polish composer Wojciech Kilar, bringing us a pulsing dramatic overture and eerie slow waltzes, sumptuous costume design, and nightmarish Escher-esque set design, along with tricks of forced perspective and reverse footage, the film courts the senses, and the whole experience feels at once nostalgic and modern. Though the film parts from the book in several key ways, thematically it retains fears about the spread of sexually transmitted disease and foreign invasion prevalent in Stoker's novel. While critics praise the film as a whole, many cited Keanu Reeves' accent as a negative, though to my ear it's hardly as jarring as many I've heard less about, and his performance, while at times feeling fittingly repressed, is authentically passionate at key moments. It is, for my money, a masterpiece of gothic horror, one of the greatest post-70s works by one of the greatest directors. But what did the panel of peril make of it? And I'd like to hear first from the best, the best, the best.
I remember when it first came out and we saw it on a pirate copy. It was probably one of those times like Russ or Prenders went to Cyprus and they came back with loads of films that hadn't been out in the cinema yet. And I remember not particularly enjoying it.
Me too.
But in the years since, it's aged like a fine wine in as far as my opinion of it goes. It's brilliant, isn't it? Like you were saying in your introduction, the in-camera effects. I watched a documentary on the Blu-ray afterwards and they termed them naive effects because they were sort of done in the style of early filmmaking. They're so good. Like the train journey where the train's going over the book and it's a giant book placed not far from the camera with a small model train.
Yeah, a giant book, miniature train, and then the icing on the cake is they backlight the model train so that the smoke coming out of the chimney stack casts a shadow on the giant book. It's incredible.
Yeah, so good, so clever. And, you know, like Jesse Hawken said on his podcast, I was listening to that earlier today, if they'd have just used the effects like that were current, it was pretty much the dawn of CG, wasn't it? If they'd have gone that route, it might well be that the film isn't as highly regarded as it is, that it would have been a bit blah, very dated, but it's got a timeless quality because of these practical effects. There's great performances all throughout the film. Sadie Frost is brilliant as Lisi. Winona Ryder is excellent as Mina. Gary Oldman, obviously, is tremendous. Tom Waits as Renfield. We'll be coming to him in the favourite lines section. Yeah, it's tremendous. Not particularly scary, kind of unnerving at times, but that's fine. That's fine.
I don't think there's a single bad performance in it. Tony Harpo, unhinged. Keanu Reeves.
Awful.
Yeah.
Which nonsense.
That awful.
I don't mind his accent.
Exactly.
I don't. And when he has to convey horror, like when they bring the baby, that's real horror on his face.
I think if you didn't notice Keanu Reeves and you closed your eyes, you wouldn't be able to tell it was him.
Exactly.
It's not a great English accent, but it doesn't sound like Keanu Reeves.
It doesn't really matter. His performance is still really good. And people who think he's wooden
are quite correct. Yeah.
I think just haven't paid attention.
Oh, no. Yeah, Ben.
They're concentrating too much on the accent and not looking at what's happening on screen.
I've got some lines that demonstrate how bad he was.
Well, you know, agree to disagree. But also, you know, Cary Elwes, Richard E. Grant, those roles traditionally don't get depicted on screen because they're kind of superfluous to the core plot. But with this one focusing so much on the romance and Lisi being the link between the Count and Mina, they play a much more important role. It was a very good all-round cast.
I'd say, for my money, it's the definitive Dracula adaptation.
I would agree.
And I've seen a reasonable amount of them. This is my favourite.
Leslie Nielsen is spinning in his grave.
Yeah, he's also farting. He's got a fart box in there with him.
Comedic effect, yeah. He's going, whoa, 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 as he spins.
Well, both already getting on my tits, so it's hard to choose who to go see next. But let's go with Adam.
First of all, it's false advertising. It's not Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's a variation thereof. I don't like it for that reason.
Okay, valid.
Let's move on.
Firstly, there are other reasons, which I shall come to. Secondly, it's way too long. It's quite boring at points.
How long is it, Ben? You keep track of these things, don't you? On cinema, at the cinema style.
It's got to be way over 2 hours, isn't it? Way over 2 hours.
127 minutes, this Blu-ray says.
I watched it all straight through, but I was like, come on, come on, come on. And then when they roll out this romantic plot, all of a sudden, I was like, what the f-?
Gay? Is that what you were like? All right, gay? Traveling across time and oceans for a woman?
It was just like shoehorned in. And I was like, I don't understand why they felt like they needed to do it. Like the best of the best of the best has said, it's not particularly scary. It's got some great creature effects, got loads of creatures in it as well, you know, the way he changes and all that. I love all that. I love the makeup, costumes and stuff.
Mm, Wolfie Drac rules, Bat Drac, amazing.
So I don't know whether they shoehorned that in as a way to try and bring in a wider audience, perhaps. It's not obviously spoiled your enjoyment and the best of the best of the best enjoyment of it.
I think it's a really interesting take on it.
I didn't really think so. I didn't like it. I thought Keanu Reeves looked terrified at some points, not because he was facing Dracula, but because he didn't know what to say at some points.
It's written down for him.
Yeah, but it looked like he was getting fed his lines by somebody whispering.
By Marlon Brando, writing them on bit scenery for him.
Hello, love! It's me, Jonathan Harker! But yeah, Gary Oldman is obviously having a fantastic time. And you can imagine him getting the phone call, putting it down. Back of the net, got Dracula. He does a great job with it. He has a lot of fun. But yeah, I really loved, like I say, the creature effects, the costumes. I thought it could have been a bit more gothic for my liking. It's probably not something I'll come back to be honest. I was a bit disappointed.
The feeling's more than mutual. Let's turn now to Ben.
I like that Craig sees any criticism of a film he's picked as a personal attack.
I am counter-attacular, after all.
That's true. So for me, this film is two things. Horny as sin.
Oh, yeah.
And flawed. So it feels to me like the director was bursting with like too many ideas and he wasn't able to fully bake them all. I think it felt like he just was so excited. He was like, put this in, put that in. Nothing was ever given the time to be really fully developed. It was like that guy who shoved all them birds into the pie and he shoved so many that their little feet stick out the top.
Sweeney Todd.
Henry VIII.
Yeah, someone like that.
Little Billy Bunter.
Old King Cole, was it?
It just felt a bit bloated and muddled at times.
Nat King Cole?
Could have been Nat King Cole.
He's a merry old soul.
Nat King Cole. Well, it's Natalie Cole.
Anyway, that kind of bloated muddle feeling didn't help the pacing for me. But that said, when it worked, I think it worked really well. And as you mentioned, we'll go into details later, but the stylistic choices and the decision to use practical effects is just absolute stone cold highlights for me. They were brilliant. And I've heard that apparently some people hate his performance, but I love Gary Oldman in this. I think he's fantastic. I think he's so good that it's unfair to put Keanu Reeves in the same scene as him. Honestly, it's cruel.
Lazy opinion.
Anyway, so overall, I give it. If you want to see the genesis of the horny vampire romance film, and you don't mind lulls between action, then this film is bite up your street.
Hmm. What year did Interview with the Vampire come out? Because Anne Rice kind of was...
94.
Film all about the
yeah. Yeah, 94. Yeah,
the book, though.
Oh.
Oh, but Dracula came out much before that, didn't it?
Yes, I am aware, but it doesn't have the romantic plot in it.
No, that was added, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, my review's out of 5, if anyone's interested.
Oh, of course. Not 5.
1976. The book, Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, the book's odd, but it's the genesis of the film, I said, specifically.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. Isn't there an 80s vampire film?
Called Doing It with Dracula.
Like a vampire girl that bites a guy's dick. I seem to remember seeing that.
Carry on up Dracula. Every time Dracula pulls his arms back, his bra pops off.
Or his teeth fly out.
Let's move on to our favourite moments, and let's start with Chief Hater, Adam.
Thank you for singling me out. I'm quite happy.
Whenever you don't like a film, I'm intrigued to see what your favourite scene would be.
Easy. The first really vampire-y bit, which is Van Helsing and co. going into the crypt to confront Lucy after she's been turned. I just love that. And, you know, and then the bit with the, she's coming down the stairs with the kid in her arms and stuff like that. And yeah, like you said at the start, Sadie Frost is possibly on a par with Gary Oldman. Maybe, you know, she's just got the one character to play where essentially Gary Oldman's got two, but she's fantastic throughout. And yeah, that scene is really her pinnacle of all that. So I loved it, yeah.
So much hinges on that character as well, because she's not like that at all in the book.
Yeah, that's a bit I kind of like, that they flesh her out a little bit more in this film than the book. So that's kind of one of the bits I did actually enjoy.
I think what you were saying before as well about they didn't need to include the romance story in this. And I think it's to the benefit of it being a modern retelling, because really what you get in the book is pretty thinly veiled xenophobia. It's all about a fear of, you know, foreign invasion.
Yeah, it's not even thinly veiled, is it? It's quite.
Yeah, not really.
Those foreigners with their STDs.
Yeah, by all accounts, Bram Stoker, not totally a nice guy. Yeah, so I think it reframes the story in a way that's more palatable, I think, to changing attitudes. All right, then. Well, the best. A favourite moment from you?
I like the sequence of Jonathan following the train journey in the spectral carriage being transported, beginning with the coachman's arm stretching out unnaturally far, which was done, the actor was in a crane, which moved outwards as the camera zoomed in or dollied in.
Genius.
And then you get the carriage going through the woods with the wolves following and Children of the Night making sweet music and the blue flame force field. Yeah, it's brilliant, that journey. The cliff edge that he looks out on, where they're right on the edge of it. It's very atmospheric. It's so funny, his character, how he never just thinks, fuck this.
Exactly.
He's in immediate danger. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. He's the dog with the coffee. Everything's on fire around him. This is fine.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about his performance, because there is a note of humour to that, where when later Dracula says something to him about, oh, you might see some strange things in this country. It's like, I've already seen some strange things. He's been bottling it up the whole time because he's such a fucking Victorian uptight.
Stiff upper lip.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think gets mistaken for a wooden quality, is that stiff upper lip quality. But yeah. Ben, favourite moment?
My favourite moment spread over several scenes, but it's probably my favourite effect. I love the independent shadow, Dracula's shadow. Yeah. It's fantastic. He's doing one thing and the shadow's praying.
Isn't it a lift from Nosferatu, that, I think, isn't it?
There's something in Nosferatu, yeah, with the shadow.
Where he's got elongated shadows and stuff that, like, you know, are reaching out and stuff like that in that. I couldn't remember for sure, and it was one of those things I was meant to research afterwards, but I never did. But.
Yeah, and since you brought it up, obviously Nosferatu, the first time when you kind of see Count Orlok infatuated with the estate agent's fiance, and he looks at the locket, well, likeness of her. So yeah, I think all great picks. I'd say my favorite sequence, probably the most unsettling one for me, is when they go into John Lennon's bed from Help. Harker goes down into the basement and the floor is made of bed.
Binbag bed.
Yeah, the Brides of Dracula somehow come out of the floor and it's freaky as fuck. And then the best is when Dracula comes in to tell them off, and two of them kind of merge into one and like step away from the scene. I think all of that is brilliant. And as I say, that for me is the hero moment of Reeves' performances, when he sees the baby and just loses it.
For that scene, my comment is sexy binbag vampires.
All that stiff upper lip just abandons him in that moment.
Well, the blood's somewhere else, isn't it? That's why.
He's got to stiff something else. Yeah.
Stiff lower lip. I think the person most excited to get to this section may have been Ben, so let's hear favourite lines.
From our good friend Keanu.
Okay.
Where he's back in London after his terrible, terrible ordeal, and he sees Count Dracula. It is the man himself. Look, he has grown young.
Yeah, that's exactly how he delivers it.
It's awful. It's so awful. There's nothing in there at all. Look, it is the man himself. He has grown young.
That's Roger Moore, you're doing.
Did they not ask him to do another take?
Since you've been favoured with an ironic favourite line by Ben, there's actually a line he doesn't like.
No, I love it. I love it. It made me laugh my head off.
How about we go next? The best who I believe has a Tom Waits line.
I do. I'm going to try and do it justice. It's when Renfield has got a plate of bugs that he's offering to, must be Richard E. Grant's character. And he just says, could I interest you in an order? It's the craziest line reading. I know the character's crazy, but it is a particularly mad reading of that line.
He sounds like that guy from Vicar of Dibley. No.
Jim, yes. Yes, that's uncanny. All right, well, Adam, since you're on the mic, your favourite line?
Mine is a Van Helsing line, and I think he's just asked Harker for like a knife, and he says, "What do you want? Form an autopsy? No, not exactly. I just want to cut off a head and take out a heart."
That was one of mine, but I thought one of you might pick that because Hopkins is so unhinged in this.
That's one of the best deliveries. It's so good.
And he's got another one which is very similar, which is, yeah, she was in great pain. Then we cut off her hand, put a stick to her heart. Still so blasé about the
he's
whole
great,
process.
He's having such a great time in this. Yes. It's great to see.
Yeah.
He plays it really understated, doesn't he? I think it's just like, it's all nonchalant, isn't it, sort of thing. It's great.
Yeah, but absolutely lunacy at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyone want to say anything else about the film before we move on?
One comment about Count Dracula's very long robe when he's back in his castle in Transylvania.
Yeah.
It's trailing behind him. Can you imagine how much like lint and dust he's going to be picking up everywhere he goes in that castle?
He's his own cleaner, isn't he?
He's his own Roomba.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why he crawls outside on the wall. Before we get to the competition round, if you're new to the podcast and you're enjoying it, please help us to use our oligarch fortunes to buy up all the real estate in London, but just leave it empty, making a mockery of the misplaced racist and xenophobic immigration fears of British conservatives. If you can't commit any time to that, please just tell a friend and leave a review, which will only take seconds. In Bram Stoker's Dracula, the camp, creepy old Count's diabolical plan to buy up real estate in up-and-coming swanky shithole London becomes secondary to his aims when his latest captive, virginal twink estate agent Jonathan Harker, reveals a likeness of his fiancée Mina Murray, whom Dracula recognises as the reincarnation of his lost love Elizabeta. Now obsessed with a reunion, the petrified ancient prune takes a break from feeding babies to his sexy wives, leaving them to suck on Harker while he packs up his boxes of special dirt and sets sail for Blighty, rejuvenating his decrepit form by snacking on sailors and practicing his rusty moves by pitching woo on Murray's doomed gal pal and maybe more, lusty Lucy Westenra. Ultimately, Dracula is foiled when Lucy's suitors, all pissed off by his big dick energy and the fact that he's exsanguinated the object of their affections to death, unite with Harker under the leadership of insane pathologist Dr. Abraham Van Helsing to stake the hearts and remove the heads of the undead harlot and her master. In the end, it is Mina who, having sensed and embraced the timeless love between herself and the bat-nosed bastard, frees her love from his eternal suffering, driving a literal knife through her lover's heart and neatly lopping off his bonds. No way he's getting back the deposits on those 10 houses now. But how did the panel of peril rate Dracula's diabolical scheme? Was it a good concept? And how well was it pulled off? And I'll start with the best, please.
I don't think it's great. I think the fatal flaw in his plan is going straight for Lucy. Just boggles the mind as to why he would target someone so close to Mina, who is the prize that he really wants, in a massive city like London. Just homing straight in on her is just really a schoolboy error.
Yeah.
Get the Metal Gear Solid noise ready. You're seeing my plan. Just how I've taken care of that little plot hole.
I think what happened is he saw her lezzing up with Mina and he is like, Oh, you know what?
Oh, shit.
If I get the friend on side first. Okay, well, let's hear next then from Adam.
I was a bit confused of what his plan was, so, yeah. Mm. I was would have been good if I'd known that's what he's planning on doing and living off the people in London forever and ever and ever. Amen.
Yeah.
But no, it's not particularly going to stay in my mind as one of the best plots of any film.
And Ben, what did you think of Dracula's plan?
I tend to agree that it wasn't very well thought out and that the undoing was going for Lucy. But I also think he was very successful in actually wooing Winona, Elizabeth, Mina.
That's true.
Whichever one of those names she goes by these days.
Yeah, she was definitely up for it.
At the end of the day, he gave her the choice. He wouldn't turn her, right? And then she's like, no, I want to.
Come on, let's get it on.
Yeah.
So that was pretty successful. Mm-hmm. Doing the calculation, the minus florets, the plus florets. I'm going to give him 7 florets of broccoli. The lion's share of them being for his wooing techniques.
They're quite good.
The latest reincarnation didn't go to plan. In the heart of Transylvania.
He gets at least 2 florets just for saying,
I have crossed oceans of time to find you.
Anyone hears that? If someone says that to me, I'm wooed.
Yeah.
I'm hard as wooed.
I have to agree that his beeline that he makes for Lucy is his undoing. And we've already, I think, kind of touched on Gary Oldman's portrayal, but there's been a lot of on-screen Draculas. So how do you rate him amongst the kind of pantheon of your Bela Lugosi's and Christopher Lee's and your the guy from Prison Break who played Dracula in Blade
Dominic
Trinity?
Lucille, yeah.
He's up there for me.
Yeah.
Trying to think of who I would possibly rank above him. I don't know whether I would. I haven't got an encyclopedic knowledge of everybody who's played Dracula by any means, but
no,
the guy on the Stephen Moffat version was very good until obviously episode 3 of that shit.
Yes. Kleist Bang.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he was great. Your fella from Godfather 3.
Al Pacino.
James Caan.
I'll drink wine! That's Al Pacino.
George Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
He did a version. And also, yeah, Frank Langella's Dracula.
Frank Langella
was
did
really
one,
good.
And obviously, I think the yardstick is Christopher Lee, isn't he? Because he's on the plane.
Yeah, yeah. But I do personally rate Gary Oldman. I think he's brilliant.
I think he's got more to do with this Dracula than any of the others because essentially he's got 2 versions of him to play, hasn't he?
Yeah, the prince.
Plus the creatures as well. So
right,
you could say like 2.5, 3. So yeah, he's got a lot more to do, so it's more for him.
Wait, I haven't had my say. I have a say.
Yes, sure you do.
It might be a generational thing.
Yeah.
But to me, Gary Oldman is Dracula. I don't think of Christopher Lee, although I know he has a very, very famous portrayal. I don't think of Bela Lugosi, although I'm aware, but perhaps it's a generational thing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I haven't seen many of the Hammers, and I probably would think of Bela Lugosi first, just because when Ed Wood came out, I got really into all that shit, like Plan 9 and old Bela Lugosi Dracula stuff. But yeah. I think you're probably right. This version of Dracula as a movie villain, what do you think?
I suppose he's
soft as shite.
No.
I think he's fairly iconic, isn't he?
Yeah, and I don't think he's soft either. I think he's quite evil.
Yeah, he's quite nefarious.
He's very evil to begin with, and then as soon as he meets Mina, he goes to pieces and he's all weak at the knees.
Hey, we've all lost it over a lady love, haven't we?
Yeah, I guess that's it.
I used to go around slicing Achilles tendons till I met my Mina. Now look at me. Now I don't even drink beer.
Now, I think that with the monstrous incarnations of him, the wolf, the bat version, the mist and everything, I think he's a truly kind of terrifying opponent. They probably would not have been able to best him if not for, you know, the fact that Harker uncovers this thing about his special dirt and him having to go to his coffin at peak times. So that's how they kill him in the book, isn't it? There's no showdown.
Obviously,
obviously Mina doesn't do it. They fucking sucker punch him, poor bastard.
I think, and it finally proves the old adage true, doesn't it? It's not the cough that carries you off, it's the coffin that carries you off in.
Oh.
Okay. Well.
Moving swiftly on.
This is the part of the show where the Panel of Peril compete for the title of Season 5's Most Diabolical. Up for grabs, 1 point for each vote, which will go towards the series leaderboard. Dracula trying to have his cake and eat it, seducing a couple of sappy estate agents into selling him prime Thameside real estate, while also seducing the fiancé of one of the men. But what would you have done differently? The best, the best, the best.
The death of Joseph Merrick, usually referred to as the Elephant Man, in 1890, fell a few... Uh-oh. Have we got similar plans? Did somebody gasp like, fuck?
No, just found out that he's dead. I didn't know.
What do you mean, John Merrick's dead? No, oh, can we stop recording, please? I've got to go and compose myself.
I'm taking a mental day.
Okay, I'll start again. The death of Joseph Merrick, usually referred to as the Elephant Man, in 1890, fell a few short years before Count Dracula arrives in London and sets up shop in Carfax Abbey. Nevertheless, even whilst wizened and ensconced in Transylvania, he had heard tell of the marvellous freak show that had been made of the unfortunate soul. He had heard the tale, and it had given him a little idea. Along with the boxes of special dirt from Castle Dracula loaded onto the Demeter was the equipment to erect a large tent, large enough to feature several partitioned rooms for visitors to pass through in turn. Also, a state-of-the-art remotely controlled gas lamp lighting system for the tent that allows you to light each room in turn. He also has a raven transport a telegram back to his homeland telling his three brides to kill Jonathan Harker immediately because, well, why wouldn't he? After wending his wicked way across the ocean waves, Dracula sets up camp in a central London location, sure to have lots of footfall for his tent-based business venture. As he's pointing at things and saying stuff like, "Put that there, not there," to his workers, he spies a certain Miss Mina Murray. "Oh, my stars and garters," he thinks. "She really is the reincarnation of my poor Elizabetha. And who is this she's with? A young friend with ginger hair, a welcoming smile and a wickedly naughty tongue. It would be stupid of me to feast on her blood," Dracula surmises, "her being so close to Mina and all. As the old Romanian saying goes, best not to shit where you eat, love. Nope. I shall simply keep a supply of these workmen to quench my lust for human blood and keep my countenance young and curly-haired," concludes the Count. He then woos Mina, as in the film, at his leisure. His tent opens as London's finest new freak show, displaying as it does a giant Batman, a giant Wolfman, a big pile of rats in the shape of a man, and some sentient green smoke in each of his erections rooms. All he need do is shepherd the crowd of gawkers from room to room in turn, with the lights turned out, and manoeuvre himself into the next cage in the next room for their viewing pleasure. Once he is in, Renfield or whoever can flip the switch, revealing his ghastly form to the throng. Count Dracula is now a respectable businessman with a prime location, scope to expand into the world of the cinematograph, and certainly is not drinking the blood of Mina's best friend and arousing any suspicions. The two are married in a field, lit by moonlight, and live happily ever after a charmed eternal life.
So, let's roleplay a sec.
"Oh, Count Dracula! Your freak show is the finest I've seen in many a year. You simply must introduce me to your bat gentleman friend there."
"Oh, well, I'd love to, my dear, but unfortunately he's terribly, terribly shy around public people. He can only stay in his cage, you see, And he's fine with the crowd, but one-on-one, he simply goes to pieces unless he's talking to you mindfully.
Oh, a dash of shame. Well, you simply must introduce me to your wolf gentleman friend.
Oh, well, unfortunately, the wolf gentleman friend, he's...
Unfortunately, I've got to say, he's got the shits. So he can't see you.
Oh, dysentery. That's terrible, terrible dysentery. I had myself, you know. Oh, you simply must introduce me to the pile of rats.
Oh, well, unfortunately, you see, the pile of rats are a pile of rats, and so they're rather difficult to wrangle.
Oh, dear. Well, how about this green spoke? Fascinating fellow, eh? Who's got a few stories to tell, what?
Remote control lamps.
After all that, that's the point you pick up on.
So it's a fair point, to be honest. Was remote control invented then?
It's not remote control. They're remotely controlled. So it's just like a lever to control where the gas is going into which room.
It's just a really long, like, candlestick holder.
Don't they have one of them in that Charles Dickens Doctor Who episode where the Welsh woman from Torchwood turns off the gas lamp from down the hall?
They do. So there.
Any more questions for the best?
No, I think your Victorian gentleman destroyed him aptly.
Yeah, either the crowd's going to get restless about this freak show or the local council is. Yeah, what's all this said? I've heard tell you're keeping a sentient green smoke creature in here. You can't have that on the Thames myself.
You can't have me.
Well then, next, let's hear from Ben.
In the heart of foggy London, Dracula set out to win the heart of fair Mina. Eager to blend in with the mortals, the Count tried out for the local cricket team. His incredible reflexes and uncanny skills on the field secured his spot without a moment's hesitation. Then, in celebration of his recent real estate acquisition, Dracula hosted a lavish dinner, inviting none other than Jonathan Harker and Mina Murray. It was an evening filled with opulence, laughter, and an array of dishes notably lacking in garlic. Amid the grandeur, Dracula extended a cordial invitation to the couple to attend his inaugural cricket match. His charismatic assurance would accept no refusal. The match day arrived with an electric buzz. Dracula, with Mina watching on, played as if possessed, his prowess on the field unmatched, each swing, run, and indeed catch surpassing the last. He also wore white pants two sizes too small in order to accentuate his ample trouser stake. After his 1,000th run, he joked with a glint in his eye that Mina was his lucky charm and insisted on her presence at every game henceforth. Captivated by the exhilaration of the sport and the enigmatic Dracula's undeniable allure, Mina found herself eagerly agreeing. Match after match, she watched, enchanted, as Dracula dominated the field, his figure seeming to blur with grace and power. Jonathan soon found himself sidelined, a mere spectator as the bond between Mina and Dracula grew stronger with each game. The inevitable came to pass. Mina, swept up in a whirlwind of admiration and newfound love, parted ways with Jonathan, calling him a monotone dullard and leaving him as forlorn as a forgotten wicket. Through the gentleman's game, Dracula had wooed and won the heart of the woman who had captured his own. And London, once a city to conquer, had become the stage for a love story woven through the cheers and creases of cricket.
There's one fatal flaw in your plan, which is that cricket is the most boring game ever invented.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
At the time, it was the Premier League of its day, wasn't it? Everyone was loving it. Everyone would be at the games, like, cheering, like, tops off, shaking the boobs.
It was like spring break on acid.
That was the first version of the clickety-clacker, wasn't it? Shaking the boobs from side to side.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a cowbell.
You know, those office trinkets that you get where you hit a ball and it perpetually swings.
Newton's cradle.
So you have a line of women, one flops one boob, knocks the domino down, It's just perpetual motion.
Very good. I should pay money to see such a thing.
I think cricket would give Dracula the heebie-jeebies because essentially the stumps are wooden stakes.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point. Didn't think of that. But luckily, he moves so quickly, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
One false move, trips straight onto the stumps.
Oh, that's a sticky wicket.
How's that?
How would you summarise this?
Two words, cricket, Dracula, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know that the cricket happened, but I don't really understand why.
No, nobody does.
He wants to kind of move suspicion away from him, so he joins in like what all the fellas are doing, cricket.
Starts to look like a normal man.
Yeah, he wants to blend in, and then because he's got all these preternatural skills, he becomes a bit of a star of the scene.
Yeah.
And as we've seen with Premier League footballers, I know you had a thing for Ashley Cole for a while there, Craig.
No, that was Cheryl Cole you're thinking of. I didn't have a thing for Cheryl Cole. What I'm saying is Cheryl Cole had a thing for Ashley Cole, and that's what I'm thinking of.
I'm always mixing you and Cheryl Cole for some reason.
You are. Yeah. I've done my best to shake off the accent, but it slips out now and then, doesn't it?
So yeah, so then he becomes like a bit of a star. Mina's attracted to him just out of curiosity, really, and then he gets his wooing powers going. And soon, Harker's sidelined. The Count is the toast of London.
I get it. All right, then. If there are no more questions for Ben, let's hear from Adam.
Oh, Mina, I'm so in love with you. I haven't felt this happy in 400 years. I want to turn you into a vampire, says Drac, as he rolls around in bed, playfully pretending to be a puppy.
Hello, Dracula. Cool. I bloody love you too. But I must be foresight in saying I do not wish to become a lady of the night or creature of the night thereof, says Mina.
Plus, she's a bit worried her ex might, you know, put a stake through both their hearts. Now, Drac, in this particular film, is more a lover than a monster driven by bloodlust. Mina doesn't want to be a vampire, so perhaps he should prove his love to her and also get those seeking to kill him off his back. He hears of a unique cleansing ritual and decides to do the unthinkable.
Coffee enema?
Potentially. He stalks his prey as they make their way through London's empty streets. Then he pounces. Not to kill, but to capture. Quickly binding and blindfolding them. As Drac transports his quarry to one of his properties, he reveals himself as an unholy monster, but appeals for clemency and ultimate redemption.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned, says Drac. I have never confessed before, so this could take a while.
As the bishop listens and questions him, at first terrified and confused, but as Dracula's story unfolds, he begins to see that this isn't some sadistic plot to bleed him dry, but the confession of a man, finally at peace and with something to live for, a good woman. As the hours pass by, Dracula eventually reaches the end of his confessions. The bishop stands as Dracula drops to his knees and bows his head.
I absolve you from your sins in the name of the Father, of the Son, and the Holy Ghost, says the bishop.
A blinding white light emanates from every orifice of Dracula, and he screams, forcing the devil from his soul and removing his immortality as a demon of the night. Dracula, no longer Count Dracula, but Keith Dracula, the human, is no longer a threat to London or the rest of the world. The bishop attests to him being mortal and free of any previous sins of his previous life and protected by the Catholic Church as the ultimate confessor and showcase of the power of God Almighty. Van Helsing even invites him round for tea to work on other troublesome blood diseases that Drac has an insight on. He and Mina are now free to live in one of his houses in London and live off the income from renting out all their other properties.
Do you know if there are any sins that can't be forgiven at confession?
Don't think so. You might have to grass him up to the police, wouldn't they? Sometimes they've got.
No, I don't think they do. I think
do
it's...
They not?
No, I don't think so. Murder isn't one. There is one unforgivable sin.
What's that?
It's blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. So if you renounce God, you can't be forgiven.
You stab a big crucifix and then it bleeds. Uh-uh. You're out of here.
He's coming back to the church to get to cleanse himself, to say, look, I've done all this shit. I stabbed a cross and it bled. I was wrong, all right? I was wrong. Can we wipe the slate clean and just get on with the rest of our lives while we're still young, please?
Well, son, it is an unforgivable sin. However... You seem genuine.
Yeah. I'm going to let you have this one for free.
If a man can't repent, turning his back on God and making a blood pact with Satan, well, then we're all fucked, aren't we? Now, son, this is the really important question. When the crucifix jizzed blood everywhere, did you drink any of it? You did?
Oh. Oh. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Well, you're a bad son, but I forgive you.
Well, if there are no more questions for Adam, let's hear next from me.
Lucy, Lucy Goosey, luscious Lucy. After several months at sea, her wanton ways are irresistible. And Lucy, what a fucking misnomer. She should be called Tighty. To hear the shit that comes out of her mouth, you'd think she'd be as slack as a windsock. But she's all talk and is actually a tasty, chasty virgin. The first time that I saw you, girl, I knew that I just had to make you mine. But it's so hard to talk to you with fellas hanging around you all the time. You're making me dizzy. Yes, these fellows, these suitors, they pose no real physical threat to me. Me who commanded nations hundreds of years before they were born. But socially, it could become awkward. London is not Transylvania, and these men are not peasants. I wouldn't want to run into them at every cocktail party Mina and I may attend in Belgravia, Knightsbridge, or Mayfair, and be like, oh, hey, Dr. Seward, you used to date Lucy, didn't you? How is she? Still undead? No, I must resist Lucy. She has too many high-class men sniffing around her like dogs around shitty bins. And I have my London reputation to think of. Instead, I shall slake my bloodlust on the many ladies of the night who walk the streets of Whitechapel and Spitalfields. Women like those whose murders at the hands of the Ripper remain unsolved. Lives of small consequence to the filth, a.k.a. the Rosses, the Peelers, the Popo, Five-O. Yes, I will even house some of these ladies in my many homes, keep some as bloody pest dispensers, turn others to grow my army of the undead, perhaps even introduce some to high society, so they might talk me up and make it known to the local gentry that my cock is big and I don't like garlic. As for Harker, I shall make it known that he is cuckold to me, and Seward will lock him in the loony bin as he did Renfield.
Last week he wanted to marry her, now he wants to have her committed.
Huh? Van Helsing? Don't know him. But with Lucy unmolested, Seward will never contact him, so don't even worry about it.
So it's basically turning sex workers of London into slaves slash drink slash army.
Yeah.
It's amazing how often that comes up as your plan.
So
Some cock-hardeningly diabolical schemes there. But who will get the votes? First of all, we had the best's freakish erection. Then we had Ben's cricket bat. And then we had Adam's less teeth, more Keith. And finally, we had my high society hooker hoodwink and Lucy Westenra temptation avoidance. But who will get the votes? The best, who you vote for?
If for no other reason than Keith Dracula, I voted for Adam.
What was for Adam?
Keith Dracula, that just swung it for me.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Thank you.
In that case, let's go next to Adam. Adam, who you voted for?
Well, I voted for a plan, and I've written the winner's name in style of the plan I thought it was, and it is Craig. And they look, it's made of bananas.
Made of bananas.
Mostly, wow. Apart from the R, because I didn't really know how to make a banana R.
It's the thought that counts. Well, and Ben, who did you vote for?
I too have voted for Keith Dracula.
It was pretty irresistible, but I voted for the plan that I had the most fun with, and despite the role play that we had, I still think it works, and I voted for the best. I forgot to put his surname, The Best, but I think we all know who I meant.
I can surmise.
So, the best, what has that done to the diabolical leaderboard?
Well, we've got a couple of new joint leaders with 15 points apiece are this week's host, Craig, and Adam.
Boo.
Next up with 14 points, we have Ben.
Wanker! Yay. Wanker!
Best one on the podcast.
And then bringing up the rear with a mere, meagre 12 points is the best.
Oh, it's still close, though, isn't it?
Fuck me.
One good week, the best, and you could be right up there again.
That's what she said.
Sad that she in this case was his great aunt Nancy.
Well, next week, Ben will be hosting. What diabolical delights will you be asking us to sink our teeth into?
Well, it's time for our seasonal Bond film.
Oh, shit, we haven't done a Bond film yet.
Not yet. And so we are going to be watching He's the man with the golden gun. And a third nipple.
That was one of my favourites when I was a kid. Looking forward to it.
The old Dracula, Christopher Lee, is the villain.
Yeah, so we are going to be doing The Man with the Golden Gun.
Lovely.
If you want to get rid of someone. The man with the golden gun.
I've got it on DVD, so I can watch it on there.
Well, watch it on DVD.
I might do, just to see your face.
And that wraps up this episode, like a sexy vampire bride wrapped up in another sexy vampire bride wrapped up in a floor made of bed. Thank you for listening. And if you want to sell your soul to Satan in exchange for eternal life, make sure you subscribe, hit the bell, and leave us a review on the very platform on which you're currently listening. You can follow us on social mediums at Diabolical Pod. Next week, we'll be competing to improve on the diabolical plot of Scaramanga in The Man with the Golden Gun. Until then, remember, take care how you cut yourself. It is more dangerous than you think.
Dracula! Something else, something, you won the war. Do-do-do-do. Dracula. Something else, everybody evermore. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Finally facing your Dracula. Dracula, now that you won the war.
Yeah.
It was a mash.
Oh.
It was the monster mash.
It was a mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
It was a mash.
While I'm not arguing for a second that this is Keanu Reeves' best performance or even the best performance in the film, far from it, I think it's totally solid. I don't understand the...
I was saying wooden.
I've never understood the wooden...
Solid like a nice bit of teak.
I have crossed oceans of miles just to find you.
Gary Oldman's in the ring. Jesus Christ.